Is it Piece of Chain or Tao Te Ching?
It's the Arrow Wong podcast series.
The number one Apple business and number four entrepreneurship podcast.
Speaking from Hong Kong.
Hey, Menace. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for inviting me to this wonderful activity. It's great meeting you again.
Likewise, you know that I'm not just a regular participant of your show. Actually, I'm a fan of it. I like your show. I like Podopis. So can you share with us your background in product management and why did you create Podopis at the first place?
Yes. A long story. No, but product management, I think if we look at product management, I keep learning every single day in product management. And I've been keep learning new stuff for the last like 20 years, 25 years around product management. Not always in the role as a product manager, even though that is how I started at the company ABB, doing electricity meters. Or it's also been as a founder of two or actually three different companies throughout these years. And then I've been supporting and guiding more than 200 companies in different projects, and somewhere around 20,000 people have participated in the trainings and sharing the knowledge sharing that we do in ProdBeats. So why I started ProdBeats and why we got started with all of this work is that when I started offering services in product management, it was still an area that was lacking thinking, thoughts, ideas in how do we succeed in the very, very difficult area. And I had failed. I had failed a number of times in doing great product management. And I had also succeeded. And I felt, what is it that makes me fail or makes me succeed? And I started thinking about it and started going down, digging into the area of product management. And I felt, hey, and I found some really interesting stuff. And I felt, hey, I want to share these stuff. And that's how I got started. I felt like there are so many things that we can share to make and create great products to be proud of.
Got it. So some of the famous concepts that I learned from Podopis is the value-driven product management and deferment. Can you firstly talk about what you mean with value, this word? And then explain the concept of speed layers. Speed layers, which to the audience know, just another, I'm not sure it is a concept or framework, but it is invented by you, Menace. So can you talk about
that? Yeah, should I start with the value a little bit on the concept of value firstly, and then move on a little bit to speed layers? Value is if we just talk about value, it's also very, very interesting area. What is value? What do we mean with value? Every single individual has a perception on what is value. And we've been really researching the arena. We've been involved in research with the universities, both in Sweden and in the US. And first of all, we can see that value has a lot of different perspectives. If we discuss around value, we have value that is normal for us to think about is the value for the customer. What value do we bring to the customer? And we need to deliver a phenomenal value. But then also we need to deliver value to the company we are working within and support the value environment in our company and how to continuously be able to deliver great products. And there are some other values. So first we can say there are two perspectives of value in our work, the things that are happening internally and things that are happening externally. And then also when we look at the customer side, we know from research that we perceive value different during our relationship to the product. Before we buy it, we have something what we normally call intrinsic value. Then we have a delivery model deployment period. And we could call that the delivery value when we've bought the product and we're waiting to get it up and running, whether it's a table from IKEA or it's a software to install in your power station. Who knows? But both of them have a deployment period. And then we have the pragmatic usage when we're actually using the product. So there we have three different types of perspective as well. And when we start to define value from these perspectives, what happens, what is interesting, is that we establish a language of value. And once we establish the language of value, we can evolve it. If we just say, let's deliver more value, well, when, how, for what, for whom, in what situation, then we might get lost. And the more frameworks that we can use, like the value pyramid or the value matrix from James Anderson in Northwestern at the University in Chicago, create a phenomenal framework for B2B business. And there are also the pricing pyramid that I think from a Bain Consulting that a lot of people know about. And those are also helping us to evolve the value thinking. Value so is hard and wonderful.
Yeah, so people can actually talk about it because it is a language around it. They can refer to things that are very specific and can improve from there. So it is not only about the internal, but also the external stakeholders and also the customers. So that's what we build value toward to these stakeholders. So
And I think that's interesting that if we establish the language, there's one experiment that we did together with ABB Robotics that was done. Professor Dr. Tony Goshek was running it. And what happened was that firstly, you had eight persons prioritizing according to value. And then they had a 1 hour discussion on establishing the language of value and the thinking around value. And then they did a new prioritization according to value, and 80% of the prioritizations changed.
Oh, wow.
80%. So we can see that if we are just talking loosely about value, it's not good enough. It's not good enough. We need to dig deeper into the terms and the language of value and the structures of generating value. Then we can deliver outstanding products and outstanding value.
So the language of value basically is the foundation of everything, because they are like the building blocks for people to talk about it and based on. Can I know what the speed layer is?
For sure. Speed layer is, these are, Aero, you ask these difficult. First, you want to talk about value, which is complicated as such. That is, and speed is also an interest. Speed is also a very, very interesting area. We all say we want to get faster, right? We want to build, we need to get faster, deliver faster, increase speed in the sprints, faster sprint, continuous development, continuous integration, etc., etc. We need AI to speed up things. And the interesting thing is that some things are very long-term, and some things where we're looking and investing for long-term activities, where we need to have one perspective of time, and then we have other things where we need to be very fast. If, for example, we fly with an airplane, we do not necessarily want the testing procedures to be as quick as possible. We want them to be thorough and be so we can trust everything. We want them to have simulated every single thing in there. We do not necessarily want to aim for the highest speed possible. But in other cases, when we develop functions and features or fix bugs, we want to improve speeds or deploy a new software. So the interesting thing is that we need to think different about speed depending on what you do. And the customer experience is based on all the different activities that we're doing in all the different speed layers, whether we think very long-term or very fast-term. they come together in the customer experience. So what we often talk about long-term speeds, we see that's a pulse that we continue to do, which is more strategic, where we evolve the core of the product, and maybe the short, fast speed, where we focus on things that we need to do very quickly. And speed layers is a wonderful way of thinking to create sustainable products that continuously generate profit and are appreciated by customer, and that we can continuously evolve. Otherwise, we end up, it's easy that we end up just building features into a feature fabric, a factory, while the speed layers allows us to think long term.
Got it. Maybe it's easier for us to talk about the value again first.
Let's do that. Value is fun.
Yeah. Why is value so important and hard to work with? And what is value? Yep. Just this question. Why is value so important and hard to work with?
First, what we discussed before about that value has so very many perspectives, and everyone has our own specific definition of value and what is value. So if we do not clear and set a value language, it will be very normally a very hard discussion to have. And that makes us not, maybe even that we focus on the wrong value. So that's the first part, that why it's hard is because we might not always have set the language of value. And secondly, why it's so important, I think that's rather obvious for all of us, that if we can deliver value to customers and they can feel the value and we can communicate the value, people will buy the product and we will make money doing so. So why it's important, I think, is easy. Why it's important is the easy question. And why it's hard is to establish the language. And can we do that? Then we've come halfway.
Got it. So basically, because it is too abstract, and by different people, they have different measurement of their own value. Maybe they have their own set of expectation and what does it mean by value. So,
Absolutely. And you say that's the right thing. It is, value is an abstract term, and we need to make it practical. And the language, if we establish a language, definition, perspectives of value, then it allows us to work more effectively with it, make it practical, not just a abstract term.
So how does value tree model comes into play and make it more practical?
Right. The value tree model, I hope that you can share some links to the value tree model on the that we have. The value tree establish a logic to every single value. So where we work with four layers of the value, that we have value, concept, features, and realizations. So by establishing the four different layers and the logic behind the value that we're delivering, it makes it easier to discuss on all the value itself, and also it embraces all the thoughts on value creation, not just the value, the end money term, so to speak, but all how we deliver it. So the value tree provides a value logic.
What is value logic?
Good. Now that is what we need to do. It's not enough just to have a value proposition design. It's not enough to just offer a value. I will reduce your cost by 70%. I will increase your revenues by 38, getting you more customers. People will not believe those values because they are thin, thorough, and not trustworthy. We need to share and we need to know, how am I to increase your revenues if you use my product. What will happen? Why will it happen? How can you trust that this really will happen? This is the key when we're working with values, that people need to believe in the value. If you are not, cannot share a believable logic behind the value, nobody will believe you. You know this, and whenever you go and you see these reduce weight, get in shape, or whatever, in 7 days, in 5 days, just eat this, do this. We seldom do believe them because they are too thin in its logic.
Yeah.
But if we have a value logic that explains where we go beneath and we start to understand, why will I experience this value? What will happen? If we have that chain going down to the, if we work with the tech products, why will this happen? Then we will start to believe in it. And we've seen very, very concrete proofs of that in a lot of different business, both with customers, with consumers, but very, very much so in the B2B arena. If you're selling to companies, they are very logical. They are not interested in just to have that first sentence of your value proposition. They need to understand the logic. Otherwise, they will never buy anything.
Got it. The reason why I love this topic so much is a little bit change of the value logic or the value proposition. It can change your positioning of your product in a big way, and it affects the product pricing in a big way. Maybe your product stays the same. But how you present your product in a way that resonates with your end customers, the logic of value is so much different from the logic of the of a product, how it develops.
Yeah, I think you're quite right there. The value, there are two things I would like to comment on that. One, if we introduce the product to new customers and new customer segments, they will see the value differently. And then we can have exactly the same product with a different type of value. That is obvious. And that's also part of the value proposition design by Osterwalder and his friends at Strategizer. And what the value logic, we can use the value proposition design also, but we need to see that the thing in the value logic is how, if I think most people know about the value proposition design with job to be done, pains and gains, pain relievers, gain creators, and then the product that you're delivering and the features you're delivering. There we have like four different layers. So if we look at the value logic, we can then use also the value proposition design and look at how do these really connect. So the connection between all those areas, that is the value logic. So you can also use the value proposition design. So the value proposition design, I don't think that we really change with the value tree, that we change really the thinking a lot, but we focus on the connections, not on the objects in the value logic. That we say, why, how come we are able to solve this job to be done? How do we do that? What concept, what pain are we removing? What gain are we creating that helps you get that job done? And then we look at pain relievers. How are we really taking that pain away? And then with what are we taking that pain away? So you can use the value proposition design, but you need to connect the different areas with one another. Then it starts becoming a very powerful way of thinking around value.
Got it.
The connection is everything. Yeah.
Yeah, the connection is everything. Yeah, that's the thing I want to say. Because the objects, whatever that is, the product, or the customer, they are already there, but the framework is a seat in between to connect them with each other.
And I think that is what product management is all about, right? What we are good at and what we should propel at is connecting things. That's our job, connecting the dots, make business and technology come together, make service and support and technology come together, make our finances come together with value. I mean, everything in product management, everything connects. That's the secret of great product management. And this also goes for the value. How do we connect in the value logic? And that's what we're normally very good at. Great product managers do that. They connect things. They see patterns and we connect. Make the dots come together.
Yeah, got it. Beautiful. I want to know a little bit about the handover process that you always use with your clients without revealing your clients' information. How does the firetree sit between the product managers and the marketing department? How do you connect them with each other?
I think it's wonderful that you bring up the handover process because that's one of the things most of us in product, we don't do all the marketing, we don't do all the development, we don't do all the selling. We always need to do some handovers, and doing handovers in smart ways, that's like we just said about connecting things, right? It's in the connection where things are happening. It doesn't matter if we have a great value, if I cannot share it and make marketing understand it. And also marketing will probably also add value to your product that you might didn't even know about. So what we encourage, even though we might have done a value proposition design, we might have done a value tree, I still encourage, and what we've done a numerous time is that to make product management and marketing work together in creating a updated value proposition design or a value tree. And by doing that together and participating in the discussion, we probably also discover, hopefully, some the key values that we want to focus on. And by doing, we're learning. And then also marketing will feel the marketing value and the values. They will not just use the terms. They will be part in creating them, and then they can use them. So I love to do that. We went to sit down together with marketing and sales and product management, and we together build the value logic and establish a way of working with this product. We did that just this spring with one of the leading company, a huge company in Germany with what is 120,000 employees. We worked with some of the products in this process. Mm-hmm. How do we connect product management with product marketing and do this rollout of the products and communicate on value, value-based communication? And it works. It accelerates the journey. If we just share the papers and the logic, it takes a long time. Do you feel the same thing, Eero, that being part of something when you're discussing it and working with it, that we really learn a little bit deeper? We feel a little bit more. Do you have the same experience?
Yeah, of course. The only way for me to achieve anything is to doing it, because by doing it, that's the only way I can feel it. And after I can feel it, like what you say, I can connect the dots from that understanding. Yeah.
So, and I think the way that you act and the way that I act by doing, we get it. If somebody just share a model with us or some value proposition, it's not enough. I'm limited to those words. But if we would do some work together and we evolve it, then I am able to be more creative in my communication. Because I know the logic, I know the value logic. I can use the value logic as a marketeer. So I think that we should develop the value logic together between product management and marketing.
I think it ties back to the language that you basically you establish a set of language around the follow logic so that people can be explicitly to talk about anything because we are at the same level of understanding. We have the consensus so that we can move forward together. That's the only way we can connect the dots. Yeah.
I think wonderful. I think that the language, if we cannot have share language and then also maybe share some models and tools like value proposition design, like value tree or some other, there are actually quite a lot of value tools that are relevant. So let's share a language, let's establish a tool to use, and then we can make miracles together and we can create and we can learn and we can, and it's fun. And it's fun.
Yeah. you just mentioned something like a value based is marketing or something. But I want to ask you the value based pricing because I'm not too familiar with the example of like Ericsson, Tetra Pak, and Atlas Copco. Because the reason why I really want to ask this question so badly, I have been working into the B2B technology space for half a decade. And then because I'm based at Hong Kong, I'm not too familiar with these brands. They are great names, but I haven't studied these case studies. So I would like to know how are these companies is leading the way in the global B2B market with value-based pricing.
Good. I think these are three phenomenal companies here in Sweden that I'm sharing about. And of course, there are lots of other companies that are great in value-based pricing throughout the world on consumer and B2B, in the consumer and B2B space. When we look at pricing, there are two ways that are very normal to work with pricing. Either you do cost-based pricing, which is of course very difficult in the software space, but then also we do a lot of market-based pricing. And market-based pricing is very passive, where we actually let our competitors drive our pricing strategy, and that's not a good thing. So what we can do if we are able to work with value, and we've been good at establishing value, then we can look at, we can use the value creation to establish the value-based pricing. Let me look at these three examples a little bit on pricing thinking and about how they, these three companies in some areas are able to use that, use value in a good way. Atlas Copco are doing electric screwdrivers and tools for for assembly, for unloading cars, automotive industry, in factories and industries. A lot of companies are using their tools. They're by far the market leader in the automotive sector with assembly tools. And how did they become that? They had the most expensive product of all.
Yeah.
By far. And how did they do that?
Mm.
Yeah. They focused on the value that they had discovered that they were unique in. They were delivering better quality in this assembly than anybody else. And the tools were about the same, but they had some unique features in how they handled torque, measurements, acceleration, retardation, and how they handled the speed of screwing screws, for example. And this meant that once every 1,000 screw, they avoided a quality problem. That does not seem like a lot, but if this means on a car that you have to call back, you risk calling back 100,000 cars from the market, that is a lot of money. So they focus very much on their uniqueness of never failing. They never failed. And what is the value of never failing? Then they were able to charge more than anybody else in the market, and they still became the market leader. And Atlas Copco Tool is fantastic in earning money and identifying value better than anyone else that I've met. Atlas Copco Tool is the company to go to and study if anybody wants to study value.
This is an MBA topic I really like to talk about because you just mentioned cost-based pricing, market-based pricing, and value-based pricing. And everyone would like to charge the premium price, right? Who doesn't like to? But it sounds so simple. It always related to a unique positioning, and then it cannot be replaced with anyone else. But at the end of the day, it is still abstract because for market pricing, for both market and cost-based pricing, I can reference or benchmark from something else, right? But for value-based pricing, it is abstract.
No, it's not. I would like to argue on that. If you look if you put down the work, what Atlas Copco is doing and some other companies are doing, they put down an enormous amount of work, and it's not both on two different things. When you say that value is a positioning, it's not. It is. It's a result of a lot of work. But what happens is, firstly, we need to develop the product that delivers value. We need to find what to develop in the product that changes, that is different from everybody else. If we're just following everybody else, doing what everybody else is doing, then there's no value in your product. We're just a follower. We need to find, and to do that, we need to find things that are also long-term values, not just being a little better than the competitor, solving a problem that somebody else can solve. We need to find value in problem space and values that we can deliver that will deliver sustainable value. And that's a hard work to identify. It's a hard work and also to develop that. In the Atlas Copco Tools case, that meant that they had to do a lot of research, spend a lot of money in evolving new technologies to achieve that. It's not just a value marketing thing. It's a lot of hard work in development and product management. And secondly, it's both in finding, doing market research. Atlas Copco is doing continuous research on value among their users. And they're investing lots of money in their development of products to meet that research. Then we can position the product in the value. And what's even more exciting is that they also measure what is the value. Both they build value calculators, churning the value. What does this mean? They simulate the usage of the product at the customer side with formulas, with value calculators that are real, that our people can trust because they built on real data. It's not the marketing department or an ad agency that created them. They've created by the product team, but people that know the product, the people that know the customers. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. But that's one of their secrets. That's one of their secrets.
Thank you so much. I totally understand now. So it starts with the square one, the day of the product discovery, a lot of research, and then truly know the problem space and evolve from there. After the product is created, there's a set of metrics. I don't know what that is, maybe speed or whatever. And then because they've built a mathematical model, there's a model to actually measure the value so they can make the product development decision based on that. So they have their own set of value that belongs to this particular company. No other company can use it. That's why they are unique in the first place. Thank you.
And that is somewhere where I feel that where product management go wrong today. A lot. I had a discussion this morning where we are focusing too much on the customer problems. We're focusing too much on the market. And we must do that. We must do that. But we must also think about where can we build a unique value arena. It's not enough just to solve what a customer shares. normally everybody can gain access to that information. If we want to build a unique product that continuously delivers an humongous profits and massive money to the company and to the salary to myself, then we need to dig a little bit deeper. We need to think a little bit more. We need to understand the value logic and the problem logic at the customer. And sometimes we're doing this. I think that we are too short-sighted and everybody's doing the same thing. Let's look at the customer. Let's look at the customer. Mm. We need to have some unique ideas ourselves. We need to have our own strategy and take ownership of our product success, not just fulfilling customer requests or solving customer problems. We need to do that, but that's not the only dimension. And when I see product management today that are focusing only on doing that, they will have a problem in getting long-term profitability running.
Please help expand my mind in terms of the word that you just used, value arena. I totally agree with you. So many companies nowadays, they just focus on the problem space, just one point. But for the arena, it's like a long wall ahead of you is going into the future.
So, where you want to play, you know, in the ballpark. We need to be in the ballpark, in the value ballpark, deliver great value continuously and evolve it. And somebody, if we do deliver a great value, somebody will copy us quickly if we cannot find a way to protect that in one way or the other, which is difficult. So we need continuously to evolve the value that we're offering and use the technology that we're offering. And I think that in every single company where we've started to work, we've seen that we have found unused values and unused value logic, unused resources in the company, in the product that do exist that are not being used every single time. That we've limited ourselves to the customer problem and the existing customer problems.
Got it. So, as long as a company has the value tree and speed layers, I can continuously to deliver value in the value of the arena. Yeah. Will I miss anything?
Yeah. No. You're quite right. That also with the value creation, we look at value differently. When we're doing very fast work, a company is about to buy something. They have their checklist of checking out what software to buy, or a customer is going to buy a car, and there's a checklist of things that what do we need to have in that car. Then it's quick, it needs to be fast, we need to think everything about the process or the work interactions and support that we do. And then we need to think about the complete process as such. If you look at buying a car, Tesla has done a phenomenal job. Mayra Malik at Tesla, when we had a discussion with her on the buyer's journey, where they redesigned the complete buyer's journey to make the buying process more friendly, and that's and allow the customers to take part of the value that is being offered by the car. And then, of course, it takes a very long time to develop and deliver the car, and the concept and the design of Tesla car takes many years. So here we can see that those three things now come together within the Tesla family with the value. They have a very good value experience when you're looking at the car. You go to a showroom, you look at the car. The sales guy is not allowed to sell you anything. They have a process that is very established and good that you feel secure with, a good communication, a set of tools that you believe in how to experience the value. And then, of course, they spend a long, long time developing the car and having their own thoughts on what success and what value they are to deliver. The value in a Tesla car is not driven by the customer problems. It's driven by a bigger purpose. So if we take ownership of our products and don't allow customer problems to take ownership of the problem, then we have an easier time to have sustainable success.
To wrap up this session, is there a thing you would like to add in terms of to being a visionary? I believe that's the right term to frame our discussion, because to think outside of the box, it means to think outside of the problem space, which we always focus on too much. Is there anything that I miss that, or you would like to add?
No, first of all, I love problems. Problems are good. Problem helps us. And I love that that problem space and design thinking is truly a part of our of our work. But that, and that we're being fast and iterative, we're doing things fast, that's also very good. But we need to take ownership of our success. So when we work with the speed layer, that's a framework, a concept to take ownership of long-term success. When we look at value, that's kind of also, that's what we are, what we create with the products and with our processes and how we deliver it in choosing the right customers. It's also something that we take ownership of. And I would like to stress the, it's not right about doing product management. It's not about being a product management. It's about taking product ownership, ownership of the success of your product. And nobody can do that but you as a product manager. We make sure that we are running, guiding the products to success. And I think that's the role of the product manager.
Oh, thank you so much. It just recalled me a book about extreme ownership. It is written by a military guy. And then if anything goes wrong, that's all your fault. You have to call me.
We need to take an ownership and at least responsibility. There is a difference with product management, with accountability and responsibility. And but we have some great product managers taking full accountability of success and some others who do not. I think, for example, what if we've added over the last year a lot of good stuff to product management, on problem and management, design thinking, etc. But we've kind of lost the vision, the purpose, the everything, the long-term thinking. For example, I think that Radhika Dutt is now bringing these up in her Radical Innovation book about that she kind of brings up the way we did product management maybe 10, 15, 20 years ago. That is, that we need to add to the short-term thinking today. We need to also have a long-term thinking, like with the speed layers.
Beautiful. Basically, our discussion is just using many different ways and terminologies to look at the same discipline from many different dimensions, I would like to say.
You're quite right. Product management is a multidimensional job, and we need to work in multidimensions. That, and we need to connect stuff. Then we can, then we will succeed, and we'll have fun doing it. When we do that, it's a lot of fun when you see these connections and we see that, wow, this is how it works. This is why this is so important. That is how we're going to make the money. That is how customers are behaving. When you see all of these patterns happening, and we can see them and we identify them, now that's, that's a lot of satisfaction for all of us working in products, right? And connecting the dots, keep doing that. Let's keep doing in all different perspectives and dimensions that we are working with. And that's what makes product management so much fun.
So thank you so much, Melis, to have this talk with you. It is like I have another, I've participated in another episode of the Product Biz, because the reason why I like Product Biz is what Product Biz is doing is always trying to paint the picture for the same principle, but looking at it from many different angles, so that I can feel the principle more deeply. So this conversation is to has the same exact impact on me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me be on the show and having a discussion with you, Eero. That's been wonderful.
So for the audience, until next time.